Welcome to Behind the Buyouts, the Deals podcast, where we sit down with private equity and venture capital practitioners and talk about their deals and deal making. I'm your host, Chris Nolter, senior writer covering telecom, media, and technology. We have with us today Jim Carlisle, managing director of Thomas H. Lee Partners. Jim heads THL's technology and business solutions vertical. He also heads the firm's automation fund. And we're going to talk about robotics, automation, vertical, horizontal, infrastructure, software, and marketplace businesses today. Welcome to the podcast, Jim.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having me on today.
So you had the technology and business solutions vertical and the automation fund. Would you elaborate on your role there?
Sure. So as the head of our technology vertical, as well as our automation fund, I have the privilege of working with about 30 colleagues and helping to identify the sectors where we spend our time to make investment decisions around the companies in which we hope to invest, as well as to manage the portfolio of companies towards growth that we've invested behind. As a result of my leadership on the automation fund, I also serve on the investment committee of our automation fund, as well as a rotating member of the investment committee in our flagship fund.
Okay, so THL breaks down technology into five identified sector opportunities, or ISOs. Would you discuss those groupings?
Yeah, happy to, Chris. So really central to the strategy that we have as a firm is deciding which sectors of the global economy are most attractive with respect to secular growth. And on the technology side, we've identified five of those overarching sectors that we invest behind: automation, and then three types of software: vertical software, horizontal software, and infrastructure software, as well as the fifth one, marketplaces. Inside of each of those five ISOs, there are also sub-ISOs, as we call them, or subsectors, really, where each of our deal teams spend most of their time, which are much more specific or narrow areas of those particular sectors where we see both opportunity for investment as well as a deeper level of domain expertise that makes us a relevant partner to the management teams and founders who we have the good fortune to back.
Well, let's start with robotics and automation. I mean, I think, you know, that maybe sounds like science fiction, but there are a lot of really practical applications that they're being deployed in. How do you approach that field?
It's funny you say science fiction, Chris. I saw something the other day that George Jetson, you remember from the Jetsons, would be born in this year in 2022. Back from the show in the 60s. But the truth is that robotics and automation are not science fiction. There's been enormous investment in technology to be able to solve some of the, you know, most central challenges facing companies on a global scale today. And those challenges run from labor shortages to inflationary pressures, sustainability demands or desires, supply chain issues, deglobalization concerns. And we've really studied how to invest in different types of technologies, whether they're physical automation like robotics or digital automation, which is software, to things that sit in between, what we would call hybrid automation, oftentimes using IoT devices, which I know is a popular buzzword in a lot of technology press today.
Yeah, you're right. It is. Now, can we drill down into some of those applications, like maybe start with physical? You have some investments in warehouse automation?
Yeah, our thesis around warehouse automation started 5 or 6 years ago when we identified a pretty obvious trend, the growth in e-commerce on a global scale. And we're looking for ways to invest in the infrastructure behind e-commerce. So trying to find those companies that were selling the shovels and the picks to the gold miners, if you will. And in the warehouse, there's an enormous need for technology to solve a couple of problems that companies face today. One is that demand is increasing at an incredible rate. The throughput of those facilities is required to increase because, one, e-commerce volumes are increasing rapidly, and two, the delivery times for goods are decreasing as well, which means those facilities need to be more productive. On the other end, on the supply side, companies are finding it very difficult to find the workers to be able to meet the demands that they see on the revenue side. There really is just a shortage of available talent. And the solution to that is technology. The solution to that is robotics. And we've invested in some I think, pretty interesting businesses that maybe could bring some color to what technology in a warehouse really means. I'll start with one that's called AutoStore, which had a really exciting fundamental innovation that when you walk into a warehouse, most of what you see is air. And that's because warehouses were designed for humans to walk up and down aisles to pick goods off of shelves and then walk them back to a packing station. And in order for a human to move around a warehouse, you need a lot of space. What AutoStore did with their technology was they took all of that shelving and condensed it into a very tight cube. And they built robots to run along the top of that cube to extract the inventory from the cube, pull it to the top, and then deliver it to a packing station just outside the cube. And that innovation allowed for a couple of really important changes to the warehouse environment. It allowed for a company to reduce its footprint in the warehouse from 100% of the space filled to only 25% of the space filled. Or alternatively, they could quadruple the size of the inventory that they had in the same footprint. And at the same time, they were able to optimize the flow of goods using AutoStore's proprietary software, which runs the robotics, to make sure that the throughput of the facility met with the customer's demands. So that technology solution really changes the way that a company can use its physical footprint to be able to meet the demands that they have for their customers. Another example that might be interesting in the warehouse space is a company that we just invested in called Right Hand Robotics, which is a business that uses a robotic arm and artificial intelligence to sense and then pick a certain good using machine vision out of a tote and move that good into a packing station or onto a conveyor or another solution. And so if you think about those two technologies in concert, you have a way to store inventory in a warehouse much more efficiently, deliver it to a picking station in an optimized way, and then to pick it from that individual tote and move it on to ultimately the packing station, which creates an end-to-end solution for a warehouse technology platform to really help solve some of those problems that companies see around labor shortages and demand access.
Yeah, Right Hand Robotics really does bring to mind, you know, the Jetsons and Rosie the Robot made. So what about hybrid automation? What's that?
Yeah, so hybrid automation is the use of sensors in a physical environment to provide real-time information to a digital twin or a processing engine to be able to make optimized decisions in that physical environment. And that's where IoT or the Internet of Things often comes into play. We just made an investment in a company called Conexon, which provides sensors either in a factory floor, in a manufacturing environment, to provide real-time location information, both on goods flowing through a production line, as well as the automation tooling in that facility, and uses that location information to feed a digital twin or a software platform that allows a company to see what's happening in real time in their manufacturing environment and be able to make decisions or orchestrate that flow of goods to optimize both the location of the tooling as well as the location of the material flow to be able to increase throughput, reduce error rates, and drive overall higher quality. Interestingly enough, that same company uses their real-time location sensing information in sports. They provide their sensors to athletic teams and put their sensors both on athletes' gear or in a soccer ball to be able to understand the movement of athletes around a field or a different type of athletic event so that coaches can make better decisions about how to utilize their athletes in a game and how they're doing from a health perspective relative to their ordinary standards, as you might guess. So hybrid automation is the use of physical sensors to be able to provide information in a software environment, again, to be able to optimize and drive efficiency in business processes.
Well, that's an amazing crossover from the factory floor to the basketball court. It, you know, I would have loved to have been in the room with them when that light bulb went off, that you know, that these tools could have such different applications. And it sounds like maybe the last category is digital automation.
And digital automation is the use of artificial intelligence and machine learning technologies in a software environment. Not all human tasks are physical. In fact, more and more labor is geared towards interacting with a computer. And many tasks that are repeated time and time again in a computer environment can be automated. And you can use technology, you can use software to improve both the use of data as it's created, as well as the processes or interactions that humans have with that data to be able to, again, optimize and make decisions in an environment. It's amazing. I saw a statistic the other day that 2.5 quintillion bytes of structured and unstructured data are created daily. And I must admit, I had to look up what quintillion meant after I read that statistic and learned that it was a million trillion or a billion billion. You might say it's a whole lot of data that's created daily, but 90% of the data that's been created has been created in the last 2 years alone. And so pure digital automation is oftentimes about interacting with that data through the creation of algorithms and the use of artificial intelligence to interact with that data and separate the signal from the noise. As an example, we invested in a company called Qventus, which takes two forms of data, clinical data or patient data in a hospital environment, and operational data or what's happening inside of a hospital, and pairs those two pieces together to be able to automate patient flow. And so if you go back to our example of sensors being used to make decisions around how to manipulate the flow of goods in a manufacturing environment or on a sports field, you can do many of the same things using signals that are provided in a computer environment when a physician logs in and says patient X is in operating room Y for procedure Z. And the software, using artificial intelligence and a learning around the types of interactions that happen again and again in a provider environment, can make suggestions to or recommendations to the physician and the care team as to how to move that patient through a hospital. And that type of digital automation can create some pretty fantastic outcomes. I think if you go to Qventus's website, you'd see that they tout a 91% reduction in excess stays for patients in the hospital environment as a result of the use of their software platform. And that drives a better patient experience and it drives a better margin profile for the provider. So many different ways to use technology and automation to interact with data to optimize decision-making and improve outcomes for both consumer or patient and business alike.
Well, so we covered a lot of ground there, and that's just one of the five ISOs. So let's move on to software. There are three software ISOs. Why don't you take us through those?
Sure. So let's start with vertical software. Vertical software is an area that's been invested in pretty heavily by private equity and different financial firms, as you know. Our approach to investing in vertical software is to try to find the intersection of our team's vertical expertise, be it financial services or healthcare or e-commerce and digital enablement, with the technology and software know-how that we've built over time. So no surprise, in vertical software, the sub-ISOs or subsectors where we're spending a lot of time are those areas of domain expertise or capability. And you'll find companies like Qventus, which I just mentioned, that are at the intersection between our healthcare franchise and our technology franchise, where we can leverage both of our capabilities to hopefully not only make a good investment decision on the way in, but help that company grow after we've had a chance to make an investment. Horizontal software is software that spans different end markets. A lot of times we'll use the verbiage of office of the as a way to describe what horizontal software is. So office of the CMO, office of the CRO, a lot of different end markets can fit inside of those types of software platforms as an example. We've made investments in HCM or human capital management platforms like Ceridian Dayforce, now a public company, that spans multiple end markets and is a software platform, again, for human capital management. Operations and supply chain and logistics are another area that span multiple end markets. And you can see a crossover in a sector like that with what we do in automation. So we made an investment in a company called Forkites, which provides supply chain visibility software to be able to understand shipper data and then help to manage the flow of goods in a supply chain for a customer. And there is a clear intersection between our automation franchise and the work that we do in that particular sub-ISO of horizontal software. And then infrastructure software is a bit more arcane. It's an area that requires more technical expertise. And the areas that we are investigating in infrastructure software are also at the intersection of automation, some of the digital automations that I just discussed, and infrastructure software. So business process automation is an area of interest. DevOps is an area of interest. So testing automation, as an example, is an area we've spent a decent amount of time over the course of the past couple of years. And different areas of data management would fit within our infrastructure software practice.
Wow. So there really is a lot of overlap between some of these groups. What about marketplaces?
Yeah, so marketplace businesses possess a characteristic that we absolutely love to find in all of our businesses, which is great unit economics. I think the power that you see with a winning marketplace is that when you can attract a bunch of buyers to a platform, more and more sellers also want to show up at the platform. And if you have a bunch of sellers of goods at a platform, you have more buyers that want to come into the platform. So there's this flywheel effect with marketplace businesses that allows them to invest in a winning technology platform. And then the marginal customer, either on the buy side or the sell side, in my example, can provide a lot of profitability to the underlying platform. So we love the unit economics of marketplace businesses. We've had the good fortune of investing in some well-known brands like Grubhub on the food delivery side, as well as some that maybe don't roll off the tongue for folks not in the space, like 10X or auction.com, but are marketplace businesses for the sale of real estate, either commercial or residential.
So you really oversee a broad array of technologies. You know, what's your background and how did you come to this?
Yeah, so you know, I started as an operations research major at Princeton, and we were using some very early forms of computer science to do optimization in the classroom. And that probably gave me an interest, if you will, early on in kind of thinking about probability and statistics and material flow in different forms of environments. I also had an interest in finance and operations research at Princeton was really a mix of economics and math. And on the economic side, probably is where I developed an interest in investing. I spent a lot of time after that, what's more of a traditional path in private equity. I spent a couple of years in investment banking before joining Thomas Lee Partners a little over 20 years ago. And after a couple of years at THL, I went to Harvard Business School before coming back full-time in 2004.
Gotcha. So you have these five sector opportunities that you've identified, but what are the criteria and parameters that you apply to these potential investments?
We spend a lot of time with our investment committee and the senior leadership of our firm in ISO identification, picking the subsectors where our teams are going to hunt for businesses. And the characteristics that we look for are large addressable markets, sustainable growth, usually powered by secular trends that we've identified. Concepts that I just talked about with e-commerce and automation are obviously great examples of that. We look for subsectors where there's an attractive industry structure. So we have an opportunity to invest behind market leaders or companies that we think can ascend to market leadership through the application of some of our operations resources in partnership with management. We've been really successful at investing in platforms that then become serial acquirers of businesses using M&A as a tool for growth to complement the organic growth profile of the business. And we usually look for businesses that have attractive returns on invested capital. I talked about the unit economics and marketplace businesses. Evaluating the return on invested capital is a key criteria for us at the onset of a company evaluation to make sure that we believe that the company can continue to compound on our investments in an attractive way.
Yeah. Are there any examples that you have of using M&A to build out the platform?
Yeah, we invested about 5 years ago in a company called MHS. The company is a parcel automation company. So if you think about the warehouse, which we described previously, of getting a piece of inventory into a box, a parcel automation company is about getting that box to your doorstep. And at the time that we invested in MHS, the company had never done an acquisition. It was a founder-created business and founder-managed business when we invested, as it is today. And we really gave them the courage to do M&A and capital to be able to add to their platform in ways that allowed them to address adjacent markets. And so over the course of the past several years, we've used M&A to expand the company's footprint into the distribution and fulfillment of the warehouse automation market. We've used M&A to expand the company's product portfolio, their automation technologies. We've done M&A to expand their geographic footprint, in particular in Europe, with multiple acquisitions in Europe. And we've used M&A to improve the company's software capabilities. And so M&A can be a good tool to access adjacent markets and then leverage the capabilities that exist in the platform company to be able to drive accelerated growth in those adjacent markets. Actually, recently, we just announced the intention to put together MHS with Fortna, another one of our automation portfolio companies on the warehouse side, which has an absolutely fantastic warehouse automation software platform that I think will be a real benefit to the combination.
Interesting. So how do the automation fund and the flagship fund work together?
Yeah. So the investors in each fund have a desire to invest in interesting automation technologies. So flagship fund automation remains an important ISO. And so when we have larger investments, companies or transactions that require more capital, our automation fund and our flagship fund will invest together in those businesses. So as an example, Brooks Automation, a semiconductor automation business that we invested in last year, was really sourced by the automation fund, but then both the flagship fund and the automation fund invested in that company to be able to create the transaction. On the smaller end, a company like a Right Hand Robotics, as an example, which are more growth equity oriented investments, the automation fund will do those investments solely from that fund. And that's really synergistic with the flagship fund because through those earlier stage investments, we get to see some of the disruptive technologies that are up and comers, if you will, and better understand the full ecosystem of the competitive dynamics in a particular ISO or subsector of an ISO.
Great. So would you discuss THL's integrated deal teams?
Sure. So one of the things that I think has really separated us as a firm and allowed us to make good decisions has been partnering with our operations group and our investment team in a single combined integrated deal team. With our strategic resource group, we have folks that have functional expertise. So capabilities in go-to-market, capabilities in technology, both technology infrastructure as well as technology product, capabilities in human capital and human capital management and talent acquisition, capabilities in M&A integration, capabilities in scaling companies through investments in the underlying systems, people, and processes. And those functional capabilities, when married with the domain expertise that our investment teams develop, in particular ISOs, allow us to create a value creation plan for a business in which we invest that is custom designed or tailor-made for that particular company. So we have a number of things that we know how to do because of the functional areas that we've invested in our strategic resource group and our operations team. But those things aren't always applicable to every business. It depends upon the particular competitive dynamics, the particular growth opportunities that exist for that company in that particular sector. And so by integrating our operational functional expertise with our investment team's domain expertise, we think we're able to make better decisions and better support companies in each sector in which we invest.
So when you look at these five ISOs, do holding periods or other factors of your approach vary between the different fields?
No, I think that we try to invest with an idea towards really accelerating growth in businesses in each sector, regardless of field. I mentioned before that we try to develop a value creation plan for each investment that we make. And that really is about applying some of our operational capability to that particular company in an intense way, in particular in the first year, And if we can get companies off to the right start, usually things go well. A lot of times when you do that, you'll uncover more opportunities that you can take advantage of with your operational resources. But that doesn't necessarily influence our desired duration of hold. We have businesses that we've owned for shorter and longer periods of time, but that usually doesn't have much to do with the end market that we're investing in. It has more to do with the specific characteristics of that business and the needs of that business.
Gotcha. You know, so earlier you spoke about your operational studies in college, and we've talked a lot about how much technology has evolved since then with some of the investments you have. Over that period, you know, these 20 years that you've been at THL, how would you say that tech investing has changed? I mean, is it the level of competition and just the scenarios you're finding yourself in?
Yeah, I guess I would use a singular word to describe how it's changed, and that would be specialization. We've had to become really deep experts in automation to be able to add the value that we need to add to management teams in that space. We've had to invest in the really specific capabilities operationally that good growth businesses need in the middle market. And go-to-market capability, selling capability is probably the number one example of that. And so we've had to specialize in domain subsectors that we can really add value in. And then we've had to bring resources to bear that are also specialized to help those companies accelerate growth. And you know, over the 20 years I've been at THL, I think we've seen continuous improvement in a whole bunch of different ways. But those two, focusing on really specific domains where we see long-term secular growth and we believe we can create an advantage and bring an operating capability to bear that is tailor-made to address the opportunities and problems that those companies see, that's really been the secret sauce for us at THL.
Are there any trends that are evolving now that you are especially keenly interested in seeing how they play out?
I think we've talked about a couple of components of those, Chris, that it's the intersection between the different areas that we study where we're seeing incredibly interesting opportunity. And so what does that mean? I mean, I've described a little bit about how automation is a tool for optimizing business processes and using data to improve decision-making. And we're seeing that in really interesting intersections between our ISOs. So in e-commerce enablement, as an example, so the front end of how do you drive consumers to make a purchase decision, we have a company called Bazaar Voice that is a software platform that uses its tools to be able to aggregate ratings and reviews across the web and across sources to be able to provide the content that allows consumers to better make decisions about which good to buy. And if you think about that, that whole path triggers so many of the different areas that we've invested behind. It's artificial intelligence using unstructured data, ratings and reviews to be able to inform decision making for a particular consumer who then may click buy, which triggers an inventory call in a warehouse that needs automation so that that consumer can get that good tomorrow at their doorstep, which has to pass through maybe an auto store facility, maybe using a right-hand robotics end of arm effectuator to be able to grab that good, which gets put in a box and put through a facility that maybe MHS or Fortna designed. It maybe then gets put on a truck, which someone at Forecates maybe has the shipper data around so that customers can see what's happening on the back end of their supply chains and what's happening with the movement of their goods. Then the customer receives that good and provides feedback again on the internet, recreating that virtuous loop, if you will. So we're seeing so many of these trends pull together in different ways that we maybe didn't expect. And I think that's really fun. That's interesting to see. Another example, Chris, would be, we have a company that I mentioned called Brooks Automation, which manufactures robotics tools to provide to semiconductor fabs so that they can create the chips that we need to basically run our daily lives online in so many different respects. And problems that we see in the supply chain in different areas maybe are around chip shortages. And we have a company that relies on chips that is providing robotics tools to fabrication facilities to be able to make those chips to supply back to businesses to be able to produce the goods that we're all looking for. So it's been interesting to me as we have the breadth of technology sectors that we're covering, but the interplay of each of those sectors and the places where we've really decided to go deep seem to be at the center of many of these decision-making processes. And that for me has been a lot of fun to be witness to.
I can imagine. And through this conversation, you see really how deep automation is, just to pick one, and how many different categories and applications there are. Was that the motivation for having a sole automation fund?
It was. We saw first through warehouse automation, but then as we looked around how broad automation really is, how many different end markets it covers. And we recognized that we could extend some of the capability that we've developed and some of the motions that we'd harnessed in partnership with our operations team, we could extend those to other end markets and other sectors to be able to help other companies drive growth. And even the last two investments in our automation fund were driven by other verticals at THL outside of the technology vertical. One of them, a company called Carpe Data, uses unstructured data to be able to automate claims decisioning in the insurance space. And another one, IMO, is a company that helps with medical coding. And it's amazing to me to be able to see how many different components of the global economy are relying on automation to be able to make their businesses work and make their businesses work better. And it's been exciting to see some of that as we've expanded our presence outside of the warehouse into not only different end markets, but also different types of technology, moving from physical to digital to everything in between.
Wow, that covers a lot of ground. Hey, Jim, thank you so much for your time and your thoughts on PE and tech.
Thank you, Chris. Take care.
This is Chris Nolter, senior writer for The Deal, covering telecom, media, and technology. Thanks so much for joining us for Behind the Buyouts.